Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 166. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and just purchase your stuff there. It kicks a little bit of money back to us when you do that. It costs you absolutely nothing. It's just a little bit of profit sharing from Amazon. And what it does for us is it lets us put things like this podcast together for you. So if you enjoy it, you know, it's a free way to help us out. With us today is Bob, of course. What's up, Bob?
What's up, man? It's Tuesday again. Another week. That's right. A lot of drama this week, which we'll get into going around the tech world. And for a lot of different reasons, actually. Let's jump right into reviews and get this thing kicked off here.
Sure.
I reviewed my third GeForce RTX 2060. I'm a fan of this card. I like this card. It's an affordable card. If you're playing 1080p or 1440p, it's a card that will definitely get the job done for you, especially 1080p, like higher frame rate. So if you're one of those people looking for, you know, a 1080p 144 hertz monitor, this card will pretty much do the job for you in most titles. So I took a look at the Gigabyte RTX 2060 Gaming OC Pro 6G, longest name so far, I think, in these 2060s. This one is pretty much their highest RTX 2060 before they get to the Aorus brand. Aorus is their high-end gaming brand. But this is the Gigabyte brand, and this is their highest one. So it's factory overclocked up to 1830 megahertz. So it's the highest clocked GTX 2060 that we reviewed as well. So you're going to get a little more frames because of that. It does have a custom PCB on it with a 6+2 power phase design. So the reference card has 4+2. This has 6+2, which definitely helps that overclock. Yeah, nice. And it has their custom cooling solution, which is the WinForce 3X. So this is a longer card. A couple of the other cards that we reviewed were a little bit shorter. Dual fan cooling solution. This is a triple fan cooling solution. So you have 3 80-millimeter fans on there. The fans actually spin in the opposite direction of each other. The reason that they do that is because if you have two fans together or three, if they're spinning the same direction, you get a dead zone between the fans where heat can build up. So these spin the opposite direction for that reason. This also has the idle fan mode. So if you're not gaming or you're maybe even doing some light gaming, the card's not heating up, the fans will remain off. That not only saves you power, but of course makes it so it's not as loud. So, you know, we're recording the podcast here. I don't want my fans spinning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have all of that in this card. It performed really well. Just like all of the other RTX 2060s. Again, the fans, even when they're in operation, aren't that loud. And it's just a good overall card. I like it. Again, it is on the larger side. So, it's about the size of like a normal graphics card. Like,
yeah, I think looks good. This is the one I'd want for that reason. I don't like the little squat cards. I like the longer PCB.
Yeah, I'm still 6-pin or 6-pin or 8-pin. I totally forgot now. It is a 8-pin. Sorry, guys. It's an still 8-pin, but it's a good card. It is $389, so it's a $40 premium over the MSRP of $349. So with that, you're getting factory overclock, custom PCB, custom cooling solution, and it does have RGB lighting. So on the side of it, there is a Gigabyte logo that does light up, and it will you can control it with their software. They also have software to tune the card if you want to do your own custom overclocking. It works pretty well. I think it's a good card. I really didn't see much wrong with it. The biggest thing with these cards is that they don't support NVLink, so you're not going to get two of them together, which is a little bit of a bummer, but that's on NVIDIA.
Probably would have been the absolute thing to do with this series if you could, but it's a bummer.
Yeah. These cards, this is, the lowest RTX card, so you do have ray tracing and you also have DLSS. We'll talk about that stuff a little bit later in the podcast because there's some interesting news about those things that has kind of come to light when more titles have these technologies in them.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a great card. It's a really good card. It's their highest overclocked card that they offer in the Gigabyte series. As you said, it is a longer card, and a lot of people like that look.
Especially longer with the actual PCB extends the full length. So you're going to get, you know, the components are spread out. It'll be better with heat dissipation, and as well as, you know, cooling, it's going to, you know, it's not such a compact area, so you're spreading it out and really removing that heat from it. I like that.
Yeah, so check out this review for sure. I really like reviewing these cards. Like I said, it's just such a like a true gamer's card in the sense of it's more affordable, and it does do what you want it to do as far as like this is going to give me 1080p at super high settings or 1440p at pretty high settings, and that's what I think most gamers these days want. You know, and it's in that decent price range, as I said. So definitely check that review out. And talking about gaming, you know, if you are dumping a lot of money on a graphics card, namely an NVIDIA card, you know, that doesn't leave a whole lot of money left for other components. And one of the biggest components when gaming is your keyboard. You don't want a non-mechanical keyboard if you're gaming, if you're seriously gaming. I've used non-mechanicals and they're just not yeah. very fun. And
nothing compares. There's been countless iterations of different types of membranes and domes and over the years, and with the best intentions, but they never come close to even the worst mechanical switch.
Yeah, it's just they just don't compare. That's pretty much how it goes. So Drevo, who we reviewed a few of their keyboards, they have a very affordable full size 104 key, so it's all the keys plus the number pad, full mechanical keyboard with per key RGB lighting. It's $50. That's great and everything. I like that there's companies doing this. There's definitely some drawbacks to this. So first, the switches aren't Cherry MX. You wouldn't expect them to be at this price range. They're the Otumu mechanical switches, which have been used in some other keyboards. They feel good, but if you're a Cherry MX user, you're definitely going to tell the difference, which you can, you know,
they feel better. Where do they fall between, like, Kale and MX? Like,
I would say they're close to a Kale. Like, I would say they're lower than a Kale. Definitely, I really like the Razer Switch. So if you're familiar with the Razer Switch, Cherry MX and Razer Switches, I would say, are, like, on the same plane. Mm. And then you have Kale, and then you have this switch. So it's definitely more down there, but again, like, I have a membrane keyboard here and I have that Cooler Master Memcanical, and I like typed on all three of them, and obviously the mechanical switches feel better. They just do. So it's definitely going to be the switches, while they're not as good as say Cherry MX or a Razer Switch, they're still good, and they're still far better than a membrane or like one of those hybrid keyboards, just much better.
Yeah.
So that is it's a good feeling, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you do get full RGB backlighting, and it does is software, so you can go ahead and go into the software and switch each key, do all that stuff, and the software is actually pretty good. The downside with the software is that they want you to create an account, and I'm not a fan of it. Like, you can't even use the software unless you create an account. Which I'm not a fan of.
Definitely just be able to use the software.
Yeah, so I don't know if they have like an offline mode, which I try to enable, but it still wants you to put an email address, which makes no sense. Software is in its early stages, but it's good software. It's just you need an email account, and I'm not a fan of that. But back to like the overall design of the keyboard, there is a wrist rest. It is plastic, and it's not removable. And if you don't like that wrist rest, you're stuck with it because it's non-removable.
That's strange design feature.
Yeah, it's weird. If it was removable, it would have been no problem because I wouldn't have used it. And the other thing is that I don't know if it was the switches or what, but if you would type heavy, like hard on your keyboard, you would kind of hear a vibration. Which is, you wouldn't notice it if you had headphones on or if you had music playing, but if you're just typing without any of that, you would definitely hear it. So those are kind of the drawbacks to the keyboard itself. It's definitely a comfortable keyboard to use, and it's definitely a value at what you're getting. But I just, the wrist rest really got me, because like, that's a major thing. And, you know, you're buying this online, so you really don't know what it's going to feel like. And if you don't like the wrist rest, you're stuck with it. You know what I mean? I've had plenty of keyboards where I didn't enjoy the wrist rest, or you might not even be a wrist rest person. You just like don't
use one. I don't like the wrist rest.
So you, it would just, you know, like you're stuck with it. And the second thing, it is the software. Like for me, I don't want to create an account and have you have my email address just to change, remap my keys and change lighting settings. It's just not, you know.
Yeah, I got it. At this point, it's getting really old entering our email addresses into stuff when you know that it's all just getting sold off.
Well, that, like, and it's just not like...
I don't need to be spammed for this.
Yeah, so like an example of somebody who might have done it semi-well is like NZXT with their cam software. You can use it, you can access it, but if you want to do like their smart things, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you
have to like sign up. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to sign up. But you can use it without signing up.
Yeah.
For the general operation of it. I get like, this is cloud software, it's designed so like you can save all your settings, and then if you go on another computer, or you know, you format your computer or build a new computer, you just enter in your information and all your stuff comes back, right? That's the whole idea of the software, but maybe I don't want that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, so that's the kind of,
you have to offer that as an option.
Yes. Yes, that's, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, just like with Cam, if you don't sign in, it doesn't save your settings, or it saves your settings on your machine, but like it doesn't save your any of your stats or anything like over time, like it does if you're logged in. You know what I mean?
Which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this keyboard is a value, but I think that there are better values at that price point. There are some other brands, even Drevo's other keyboards, like their Calibre, which is their 71 key. That's still hovering around $40 to $50, and that's an amazing keyboard. I use that keyboard for a very long time. But this one, I just feel that there are some other ones out there that are right around the same price that might be better suited, or at least give you an option of like removing the wrist rest or whatever.
Yeah, I think that wrist rest is a big problem. I don't know why you wouldn't come up with just the simplest solution so that you could just snap it on and off. That doesn't make sense to me.
So check out the review, and you know, if you think that it is something you might want to check out, definitely do it. And like we always say, buy it on Amazon, 30-day free return if you're a Prime member, you can, you know, try it and all that. That moves us on to our last review, which is a CPU cooler, and this one, an air cooler from CryoRig. It is their H7 Plus. This is a single tower cooler with dual fans, so you're going to get the push-pull effect on this. This is a really awesome cooler for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, it has good performance. It's one of the better coolers that we've tested, and its size. It's actually designed to fit in like any mid-tower out there. The height of the cooler is 145 millimeters, which pretty much all cases support. Most cases are well over that. They're usually 150 to 155, but you know, they cut this one down to 145, so it's not the tallest tower, but it gives you that flexibility of like, I don't have to like see, you know, if I'm building a system, I don't have to worry about this fitting or not. And it has RAM clearance. Even with both fans installed, you still have RAM clearance, which is a big deal because we all know RGB is everything, and you don't want a fan covering your RAM slots. You just don't.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you want to be able to use your RAM slots too. So.
Yeah, especially for like, you know, swapping out RAM and things like that. Yeah. So this cooler does all of that. It's really, really good. It has good performance. It's our third best cooler out of the bunch that we've tested on AM4. And the other two were the Sith Ninja 5, which is massive. It's huge. It covers your RAM. And, the other one is the Cooler Master Air MA620P. And we talked about that a few podcasts ago about the installation. The installation on that is far harder than this. The only thing that that cooler has over this one is that it it has RGB fans. This one does not, which I don't. I'm not really the implementation of RGB fans on CPU coolers is not really good because you're not really going to see them as much because they're not facing out. So I don't see them as being that, like, that's not a selling point to me.
Yeah, I think the stronger use of the lighting on the tower cooler was, I believe it was Cooler Master put it on the top of the tower. They had a light bar, a diffuser. Like, I think that was probably the best choice. Yeah.
Yeah, their what is it, the TR4, the Threadripper cooler that they currently have, and their one that's coming out later this year for all their sockets is going to have that same design.
Yeah.
And I think that looks amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a good cue to take for other companies. If you're going to implement RGB for a tower cooler, it's probably best to go that route.
Yeah. So... but yeah, it is a good cooler. It's $64.99, which I think the price is justified given everything like compatibility, ease of installation, you know, cooling performance. It's gonna, you know, if you have an i7, i9, a 2700X, or we test it with a 2700X, you're not gonna have any issues with overheating or anything like that, you know, during gaming or anything like that. You'll just, it's just a good cooler all around. So yeah, check out the review. I really like it. I could see this being like a cooler that like a lot of system builders use just because of how compatible it is. The only real issue I had was like the instructions were pretty bad on this. I mean, I've installed a ton of coolers before, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, it becomes a little more intuitive over time.
But there really wasn't any text at all. It was like the IKEA instructions almost. So they could do a little bit of better job on that, I think.
Was there any part of the installation where you felt like it needed an instruction, like more detail?
So on the cooler, they have the mounting bars already installed. And they're like these bars that you can move.
Kind of scissor.
Yeah, like they're scissors. And they're kind of really hard to move. And, you know, it doesn't really say anything about moving the bars. I expected them to just line up, right? So I installed my thermal paste, set the cooler down, and they didn't line up.
Ooh.
And then I go in the installation. I'm like, there's nothing about these bars. Well, it turns out you have to move the scissor out to get them to move. And I had to take the cooler back off, you know, already having thermal paste on it and all that. And it was not very pleasant. So again, the installation directions should have been more clear. But the installation process is not all that hard. It's not like something that I had to, like with the Cooler Master, where you have to like use this little janky, you know, like wrench and all this other stuff.
Cooler Master is the worst.
Yeah.
And then it looks like this is a screw from behind the motherboard type installation then, which is good and bad. It can be difficult to hold it in place with that method, but it's also pretty easy to get a nice tight fit.
Yeah, so you can get a real nice tight fit, but with us, so like, you know, most people will have a case that has a CPU cutout. Like every case that's come out in the past 4 or 5 years has a CPU cutout.
Probably even longer than that.
In our case, we're installed in a test bench, which we had to install thinking we were all right. And then, you know, to tighten those screws, you can tighten them to lock the cooler on, with like on the main side. But then to really tighten it and get that tight fit, as you said, you have to flip the board back over and tighten them.
No cutout on the test bench.
Yeah, no cutout on the test bench. So I had that issue. But if in most people's cases, you're in a case where you wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, most situations. Unless you're running a much older case, and then you're probably not going to have one. But that was always the struggle. Yeah. It didn't matter. You always had to pull the board out back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't have to pull the board out unless you didn't have a CPU cutout. So check out that review as well. Three interesting products this week. We have some cool stuff coming up next week, which we'll tell you at the end of the podcast. And that brings us to Case Mod Friday, and of course that's where we talk about a build or mod that's been completed in the community. And this one is another one from High Resolution Computer Shops. They do a really good job. And a lot of these aren't even like custom or aren't even like case builds mod. For like case mods. They're builds for customers that they've done. And this one is in a case that I'm a huge fan of, is the Fantex Evolve. And this is the ATX version. Yes.
Evolve this Shift, is the... right?
No, it's just the Evolve.
Just the Evolve. Oh.
Yeah. And the one thing I really like about this, and you're the water cooling guy, is the they have that reservoir that kind of sits past the motherboard tray.
How do you, like... Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the large, just that large, like, acrylic.
Acrylic, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a custom one or not. I haven't actually gotten all through these photos yet. Looks like it's got to be something they've... It's like an off-the-shelf part, but it... I don't think that anybody actually sells one like that.
Yeah.
Not that I know of. It's you know, it's channeling like a water block is, and it feeds out the bottom to a pump that's situated in the bottom of the case. Sorry, I'm not
I just think, like, we've seen a lot of that, and I think that's just such a cool thing to, like... You know, before you have, like, all of these reses that you need to mount somewhere, and, like, they look cool, but they're, like, not, I don't know. They just, like, don't flow with the build as well. With, like, these ones, I feel, flow really well, and they just look like they're part of the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they do a better job of not standing out and taking up space, that's for sure. And yeah, they do a good job of like, diffusing light, so when they're lit up, they provide a lot more, a much bigger focal piece, I guess, than a tube res. But yeah. I mean, I'm still sort of partial to the old school tube reses, but I guess that's just me being old.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the kind of newer school reses, but I think the build overall, I mean, what do you think about the build overall? It's pretty clean. It's very clean.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what you would expect from a shop. It's not, over the top. It's got nice clean sleeving on it. It looks like some of the customer probably chose whatever color pattern they got there, and then it's just a nice, clean install. Yeah, I'd be happy to order from this company for sure.
Yeah, yeah, they do a lot of really clean builds, so I'm a huge fan of all that.
Is the memory? It looks like Dominator. It's definitely Dominator. It must be RGB because from the one photo, it looks like it's actually
it's the custom Dominators. They came out with a custom color wave, and that's what it is. That's what the blue is.
Okay, because the one photo where it reflects off of the backplate on the GPU, it looks like it's that, what do they call that when it's burnt?
Yeah, that's the color. Is that what it is? Custom okay. color wave. Yeah, they came out with a custom color
really
wave.
That's really cool. Really cool memory.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, check this one out. High resolution computer shop. They really do a good job. So yeah, definitely check it out. Cool stuff there. Yeah. So we'll get into some of the drama and news this week, starting with NVIDIA, and they've been in the news a lot this past week. They reported their Q4 and 2008 financial results.
2018.
Or yeah, 2008. Did I say 18? What did I say? 2008. They're probably doing better in 2008.
They probably made a lot more money in 2008.
I don't know about a lot more money, but they were doing better year after year over year, I would say. But yeah, they're down 45% over the previous year. A lot of that has to do with the cryptocurrency boom of the previous year and better performance of new products, whereas the RTX series still isn't selling like they'd want it to. And the performance compared to the previous generation, at least on the higher end cards where they're, you know, the margins are bigger, it hasn't been doing very well either. And their stock has taken it's taken a pretty big hit over the past 6 months too. So things aren't looking great for NVIDIA as far as financials go. Hopefully they can turn it around. We'll be talking about some newer cards that they hopefully will be coming out with in the next couple weeks that might help with things. But yeah,
things are looking pretty dismal for the greedy over there.
Yeah, and what's crazy is like they're still the market leader and everything, but it's just not, you know.
Yeah, you can be the market leader, but when you're down 45%, you got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah.
Like you cannot continue that trend for too long before you are no longer the market leader.
Before people start, I mean, we talked about it last week, or was that last week that SoftBank dropped NVIDIA?
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Investment and everything like that. I mean, if you're not gonna, when it comes to things like that, like, they don't care about what you're doing, they care about the money. And if you're not performing, if your stock's not performing, it's not gonna be good for you.
Yeah, and what you really need to consider is what happens when you stop getting that funding. Like, so you say, so what? They still have the best graphics cards, right? They're still making the best parts. Agreed. True. What happens is when you start getting that funding, you're no longer able to do the research that you need to do to produce the best graphics card. And next thing you know, they're not on top anymore. And this is just something that could spiral out of control for them. They really need to get their pricing back where it's in a more reasonable place, I think. It's the only way you're going to start moving product.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see what happens. Another bad news for NVIDIA is there's an interesting article from the guys at Tech Power Up about how DLSS, which is supposed to be this new great thing, improves performance and all of that, that it's being limited within your game per graphics card that you have. Typically, when there's a new type of tech, you should just be able to enable it, right?
Right.
If it's supported in the graphics card has the cores, which are the tensor cores for DLSS, it should be able to work, right? But they did some interesting observations because DLSS was... Metro Exodus just came out, and that has DLSS, and Battlefield 5 just added it last week as well. And there was some interesting things where, like, you couldn't enable DLSS in certain situations. And, you know, after they contacted NVIDIA, and NVIDIA kind of gave them, like, this BS thing back. Most people are speculating that DLSS would cause a bottleneck in performance for the fact that, you know, there's so many tensor cores in each product, in the 2080 or 2080 Ti, 2080, 2070, 2060. And if the card doesn't have enough tensor cores to do certain things, to do the DLSS, then it's going to cause a bottleneck and have less performance. You know what I mean? Because if you just turn it on, it's going to churn those out, but it's only going to churn them out so fast. And you'll obviously, that will be your bottleneck, right?
Yep.
So this is interesting because I just updated Battlefield 5 and I have RTX cards here. And yeah, there are certain times where, like, why? Because DLSS is supposed to improve performance. That's the whole selling point of DLSS, right? And you can't enable it, which makes no sense. I have an RTX card, but I can't enable it in certain resolutions and things like that. And that's kind of, at least it seems to be in this generation of cards that this will kind of be the way things are going, is like they're going to limit when you can use DLSS and when you can't, which is pretty crappy, you know, it's... because you think you have this, that this is like reason to buy an NVIDIA card because you have DLSS, because, you know, I can get, instead of getting 55 frames, I can get 65 frames, which is obviously more playable, right, in a game.
It's just false advertising in the sense that it's telling you you're going to have this performance boost. It's like having a turbo, like, oh, this car is turboed. So once you hit this RPM, you're going to get this extra power, only it doesn't always happen depending on like what you do. So yeah, it's almost like before you buy, you want to see the list of when is this thing actually going to work?
Well, the thing is that nobody knows.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. There is the list, yeah.
When we initially tested DLSS, there was only one thing you could test it on, which was the Final Fantasy benchmark. And I always found it weird that you couldn't test it on anything except for 4K, which is odd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we tested it and we said, yeah, DLSS gives you more performance based on this benchmark. Now that Metro has come out and Battlefield, we're seeing that in lower resolutions, because there's not enough tensor cores to, you know, because in lower resolution, you're pushing a higher frame rate, which means that DLSS has to push out those frames faster, right? So at lower resolutions, you might not be able to do DLSS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because it would be a bottleneck to the overall performance of the car.
Because it can't render, it doesn't pre-render the frames fast enough, essentially.
Fast enough for what the game is running at, you know what I mean? Because again, at lower resolution, you're getting higher performance. Because
the card itself is actually already running faster than those cores can produce the pre-render. So on the one hand, it's like, okay, this is smart, NVIDIA. Yeah, obviously this is preempting a bottleneck, right? So that is what you want it to do. That's exactly the way you want it. Something like this to function. But what you're not told is that this happens. That's the problem.
Well, it's kind of like the you're not told, like, there's no breakdown of what, I mean, besides like what Tech Power Up did, like what cards
when and where.
Yeah, like when can you enable DLSS? Because again, like in Battlefield 5, when I was testing the other day, like DLSS is grayed out on certain resolutions because you can't use it, like with certain cards. You know what I mean?
It almost makes any testing moot too, because you don't know, like, is the thing actually running? Is it actually?
Yeah,
I mean, there was, like, it's not Metro grayed Exodus. Out. It is grayed out.
I've heard some things with that where, like, it says it's enabled, but then in the results it says it's not enabled. Like, it's a tricky thing with this generation. We didn't really cover it on the site that much, but there is things about DLSS, like, people have compared it and it's blurry compared to, like, normal anti-aliasing and things like that. And you know, so there's a lot of, with these new technologies, again, this is just, like, as we said, like, with this generation, it's just all messed up. Next, you know, just like how you always say, I'll buy the second generation,
dude,
you know?
Yeah.
This is definitely the thing where, like, all of these new technologies are being used for the first time. They're being implemented in games for the first time. And it's just not going to be perfect. I mean, even if you look at ray tracing from the beginning, it was such a massive hit on performance. And it's been improved in games over the past couple months. But it's still not perfect. But it's been improved. You know what I mean? So I think this generation is just a test bed for DLSS and ray tracing. Next generation is going to be even better. But you know, if you spent money on these cards thinking you're getting this stuff and it's not working correctly or all this, I mean, I would be very upset. So,
especially, a couple points. You're considering the amount that you're paying too, right? This is, you're paying a premium price that no one's ever paid in history for new cards. And to have the tech be no better, to have just as many flaws, it's almost like the state of, like, the gaming market where games aren't finished when they're released. That's almost how this feels like. Oh, and, so, I mean, so we're beta testing this for you. Sweet.
Yeah, and just for the fact of, like, you know, the whole presentation when the 20 series,
oh
the RTX
gosh,
series
yes.
launch was like, it just works. It just works.
You just put it in. Yeah, don't ask questions.
Yeah, it just works. No, it doesn't.
It's like, just, it's just free performance. Stop complaining. Stop asking questions about the free performance.
Yeah, well, and when finally the games come out that have these things, we see all the issues. So
yeah, since we're talking about DLSS as well, I don't know if you saw the article. Star Citizen developers actually complaining about the tech, saying it's a nightmare tech to implement. It's nothing but a headache and feels barely worth it. Actually, you know what? That's wrong. That was ray tracing. My bad.
DLSS. A lot of the, like I said, all this tech is so early. Yeah. It might be great down the line. It might be even great in this and with these cards when it's implemented correctly in the games. And you know what I mean? It's a really sticky situation for NVIDIA right now with this. A lot of people feel like they're kind of lied to about a lot of this.
I was gonna say it's sort of like the 970 3.5 gigabyte class action.
It's just not good for NVIDIA right now. But if you're not a fan of ray tracing and don't want to use it, or DLSS, we have a new card coming out supposedly on the 22nd, and it's definitely coming. So it is the GTX 1660 Ti. So no cores in there for DLSS or ray tracing. This is just like the old, well, it's still the Turing architecture, but it's just none of those cores. And the ones that were leaked last week, we have the MSI Gaming X card, which has the RGB lighting, almost looks like the 2060. And then we have the Armor card from MSI as well. And then Gigabyte has their 1660 Ti OC, which is it doesn't have the three fans like the one that we saw. This will be their cheapest one, I believe. And then they should have like one that does have the triple wind force.
This looks like
on
a
it.
Cut down PCB too, or a short PCB. Looks like it cuts off right in the middle of that, or nearly the middle of that second fan.
Yeah,
I don't like the notch in that Gigabyte card at the top, the white. I don't like the way that looks. I know it's not actually a notch. It looks like it's actually
Yeah, it's
a,
like
a diffuser of some sort.
I think it's that gray that's in there. It's
Maybe the render is just a really poor.
I think it's a bad
poorly
render.
Colored render. Yeah,
but with Final Fantasy, people are testing the card, and what Final Fantasy does is they put online all of the results that have been posted from the benchmark, and the 1660 Ti did pop up on there. It does look like it performs slightly better than a 1070, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's still, I mean, leagues away from like a 1080 and everything like that. But it gives you a little bit, you know, performance. This card is supposed to be 279, I believe. And custom cards, say like that Gaming Z, will probably hold a premium. But I think, you know, with this debacle with ray tracing and DLSS, people, you know, especially people who are gaming in 1080p, they want just a card that's going to get it done. They don't want to mess with any of that other stuff. And this could be that in less expensive card, I would say, at 279.
I think I would still say go buy a used 1080.
Yeah, I mean, agree. If you can find one.
Yeah, well, they're out there because people are sort of biting. The high-end user is still buying 20 series because that person wants it. I shouldn't say he.
Yeah.
That person wants it. You know, but... I don't know. The naming scheme of this card series has me thrown off. I think that's giving me a bad taste. I think it's terrible, the choice to use the 1000 number when it's you know, especially when it's touring based. So I don't know.
Yes. So these cards are going for pretty high. I just went on eBay. A Zotac GTX 1080 Mini is 301 right now with 8 minutes left. So yeah, about like three. But then there's like other ones that are like,
that's 20 bucks. Like, I'd pay 20 bucks for that's a massive difference in performance, at least in that benchmark.
Yeah. 380 for an EVGA card. Yeah. I mean, you got to look at these. An MSI GTX 1080 Armor 8G is 265 with 35 minutes left. It has 29 bids. It's probably going to go up over 300 based on.
I'd be most curious. What Reddit has, I guess.
Yeah, Reddit has a lot of good stuff. But yeah, I think you make a great point as to like, yeah, maybe just get an old 1080.
A lot of people are like, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, NVIDIA. You've kind of like, you've priced yourself out of your own market.
Yeah. Like, and talk like, about that.
The gamers are like, I know that's not the, I don't know if the, no, the gamer has to be the biggest segment, right? Maybe not by the dollar, but by the
system integrator. I mean, would be a bigger segment, I would say. But yeah.
Well, okay, but those cards are getting sold to gamers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But what I mean is like, go ahead.
No, you can finish.
What I mean is like, you know, there's still even the system integrator is having problems with this because like their $1,000 system went to 1200 1300 now.
Right, you know what I mean? Right. For a low end.
Yeah, for a low end system, you know, that they're selling. Like CyberPower's 1000, you know, $999 gaming PC went to $1399 now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just tough. And this next couple stories, there was before we get to the next one, there was an unboxing video posted. It has been taken down. It was up this morning. Of PC World Bulgaria put up an unboxing video of that 1660 Ti, Gaming Z or Gaming X from MSI. It was fully online. It has been taken offline now. So they did a little oops. We didn't realize the date or whatever.
I wouldn't say that was probably an oops, but we'll apologize later.
Yeah, but also even more credence to like weird pricing and stuff like that. 3 gig cards of the 1660 Ti have been registered with the ECC, so we will get 3 gig models eventually. So like, you know, you have 279 for the 1660 Ti.
How many gig is that?
That's a 6 gig.
Okay.
You have custom models like that Gaming Z, which are probably going to be like 309, you know, and then you have a 2060, which is 349, and then obviously custom models, and then you're going to have this 3 gig card, which where's that going to fit? 259 or something?
I don't see a use for this card at 3 gigs. Like, I mean, barely, you know,
1080p single gaming, I mean, you can do it with 3 gigs.
Yeah.
But happily? Yeah, anything 1440p or higher, you're not. But I mean, they're there. I mean, they were registered, so these cards exist. I don't know what the price. The biggest thing with this is the pricing, because if they're priced far enough out, like, you don't want a small gap in pricing between two cards. It's just they're gonna.
This needs to be low 200s, but yeah, I bet it'll be 230, 240,
239. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But that's coming too, and that's just like, it's just like Nvidia, just like they want the lower market because that's where they're selling a bulk of their cards.
Yeah.
But they're pricing the cards too close together, and the value might not really be there. You know, especially like you said, you can buy a 1080 for around $300. You know?
And I mean, there's going to be a crossover where you can buy an AMD card.
Yeah, yeah, the 580s and 570s. I mean, yeah,
you got to get way down there, but still.
Yeah. So let's. Like I said, we'll see what happens with this
Nvidia's
next launch.
Not doing it right now for me, man. They're just disappointment after disappointment. I don't understand the choices. I mean, I understand the choices. It's all monetary based right now. Everything they're doing, it's not consumer focused.
Like just like you always say, we'll see it in the second generation.
Yeah,
right?
I hope so.
Hopefully.
you think we're gonna see price cuts for the second generation though?
I won't say we'll see price cuts. I'll say we'll see, I would hope, the performance and like everything working, like DLSS will be implemented correctly. That the by the time the next generation cards come out, the new games will be out with this implemented. The older games will have it implemented correctly. That's what I would hope. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
But I think they're still selling to a market that doesn't really exist at the pricing. So if they stick to with it, there's just the money's not there.
Yeah. We'll move away from that and go to a cool product that I'm a huge fan of. I've never heard of this company, but they have this really awesome product that they just released. The company's called Pluggable, and they have launched the first NVMe SSD enclosure that's completely tool free. So the reason you might want something like this is you want fast speed. You're editing 4K video. You're doing a lot of like Lightroom work or something. You want a fast drive to work on. And you want the drive to be portable, meaning that you can take it from like your desktop at home and then you can have it with you on the road and things like that. NVMe is great, especially if you have like Thunderbolt 3 or even USB 3.1 Gen 2 on your laptop. You're going to take advantage of that super fast speed. And they make this really cool little metal enclosure that's completely toolless, meaning you can slap your NVMe drive in there without having a screwdriver or anything.
That's cool.
It's $50. It's a little more, you know, expensive, but it is still great too. This is awesome for first gen NVMe drives. Like maybe you're a high performance user and like you had a first gen NVMe in your system and like you got the newer gen, like, you know, the new WDs or the new Samsungs. Pop that out, put it in this, and then this is your new portable drive. This is your new drive that you're taking from home to work to home, whatever.
I mean, there's a plethora of like finished or sealed enclosures, right? That are great. They're durable and everything. But I think this is like really the ultimate solution for like the really heavy workflow person that wants to do all their editing right on the drive like this.
Yes. Yeah.
Like this really allows you to do anything.
Yeah. And like I said, you're taking advantage of the super fast speed.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's a cool thing. $50. I might actually get one just to like have it because I have some extra NVMe's here. Mm. And it'd be nice to just have a really fast portable drive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's too bad it's not Thunderbolt.
Yeah. It's USB 3.1 Gen 2.
Just quick, but not
Thunderbolt. That makes it more compatible.
True. Definitely.
Obviously.
Agreed.
So yeah. We have that, and what do we get into here? Oh, Raspberry Pi 3. So this was actually one of our most popular stories last week. Somebody made a loader that allows you to put Windows on the Raspberry Pi 3. That kind of opens even more. Windows 10 specifically, sorry. You know, Raspberry Pis are great. They're great for little things, a lot of IoT stuff, and just cool things you can do.
Robots.
You know. A lot of stuff you can really do with the Raspberry Pi, but somebody made a loader that you can load Windows 10 on it now. And they put it all together and did it. Super easy to do, it seems like. I feel that I could even do it, and I'm not very good with some of this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's cool. We have the link to the page where you can download the loader if you have a Raspberry Pi 3 and you want to get Windows 10 on it. I mean, that could be like a little like a web surfing machine for like your grandma.
It could be a web surfing machine for most people.
Yeah. I mean, it could even be like a little machine, like say you have this crazy build and you have this like little machine that has like, you can connect like those 5-inch screens to this and like have a computer inside a computer, like all kinds of like little cool stuff, especially with Windows. It's just cool.
And they make water blocks for these too. So throw this in your loop and yeah. I mean, I was about to say stream machine, but no, that probably wouldn't.
No. Yeah. But I mean, like I said, it's just cool that you can now run Windows on it. So pretty awesome. And like I said, we linked to the page if you're interested in a little weekend project, you could do that.
Yeah. Still though, I gotta say, I don't know why you'd want Windows 10 on it other than ease of access for most people. I would still run a Linux distro on this first. But you know.
So like I said, biggest thing is ease of access for most people, and like making like, oh here grandma, like here's this super small box, just plug a keyboard and mouse and we'll hook up display and boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So we'll move on to gaming, and we talked about the big debacle with Steam Metro Exodus going away from Steam and doing a 1-year exclusive on the Epic Game Store. And a lot of people thought this was like last minute, and we kind of speculated that it was as well. Obviously, like Epic threw some money at them, I would think. It seems like it was. Because people who went out and bought physical copy, I have no clue why you're buying physical copies of the game, but physical copy of the game has a sticker that has the Epic Game Store on it and like all the system requirements and stuff. That's just a sticker over the original that had Steam. So that's kind of interesting that this was so last minute that they like the retail box has a sticker on it covering up Steam. So
I mean, this sort of thing does happen with retail packaging all the time. Saves a lot of money to put a sticker on, but I think it's funnier than anything that is totally a last minute change. And I don't know how smart of a move this was to go with Epic. I mean, the backlash on this alone.
The backlash has been bad. Talking about that, another story that came out is that, Metacritic is like the site that reviews. It's
like Rotten Tomato movies, for games.
Yeah, it's like Rotten Tomato for games, but it's also movies and everything like that. Yeah, and what they do is they gather reviews from like high-end publications and give that score. And then there's a user score, which is like, if a game that gets a really high like meta score and then user score is pretty low, then a game probably sucks and like the developers maybe paid somebody off or something like that. But what pissed off Steam users have done is they've gone on the Metacritic page for Metro Exodus and just completely bombed it. A lot of people have given it, one out of 100, a lot of zeros out of 100.
Yeah. So many that it brought it all the way down to 4.8.
Yeah, it's at 6.1 now, but a 6.1 out of 100 is horrible.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but if I got a test back that was a 6%, I wouldn't be too proud of that.
Yeah, and a lot of the bad reviews say that it's not available on Steam. So obviously, this was like a Steam.
Oh yeah,
a big. That's the reason it's getting review bombed like that. It got an 84% meta score from critics, like game reviewers. So that's pretty bad. And I think that this might set the precedent for other games. Like, if Epic reaches out to somebody else, like do an exclusive, they're like, no, dude, like, look what happened to Metro Exodus. Like, it's been bad.
Yeah.
Let's
see, though. The big thing, though, that really matters is sales. So I'm going to do a little bit of, unless you know off the top of your head how it did for sales.
I have no clue.
It had almost 200,000 pre-orders on Steam.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It says those were fulfilled, though, through Steam. If you pre-ordered on Steam, you were fulfilled through Steam. But if you bought it after the announcement, Oh, well, you couldn't have bought it through Steam after the announcement. That's what the big thing was.
Okay. So it looks like...
Yeah, because I had a couple of buddies that were pre-ordering on Steam, and they, like, posted it on Facebook. They're like, oh, I still got it on Steam, you know?
Yeah.
Because they had bought it before the announcement. Because it was available for pre-order on Steam before that announcement with Epic Games.
There's some way to get it registered onto your Steam account, then.
You can't.
Some backdoor thing.
I don't think. I don't think it, you just can't.
That's all I want.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think this is going to be the precedent for big launches. And, I mean, the developer of the game's really pissed. I mean, obviously, and, like, well, they're pissed that...
It's their own fault, though.
I just don't understand. Like, I get that, again, Epic Games probably gave them some incentive, whether it's money, whether it was, like, we'll put you on the top of the store for... You know, however long, we'll put this much market. We'll give you, instead of like saying we paid them off, like we'll give you money for marketing on our store. Like, you know what I mean? Because you can't like, you know, buy people out like that way. You know, whatever it was, you know, I just think that there's all these store options. If I let my fans pick which one they want, I get that. That the Epic Games Store does have a better market share for the developer. It does.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the store's not there yet for me as a user. We've posted so many different graphs of like, or not graphs, but like the spreadsheets of like what Steam offers compared to other services. And I just think the Epic Games Store is so early that there's just not enough there for me as a game developer to like be like, yeah, I'll put my game on there exclusively. You can put it on there in addition.
Yeah. Like, how are you going to put a title this big on what is money. Essentially beta?
Money.
I know, but money, like, that's what I mean. It's great and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So hopefully this is the end of this Metro thing because debacle. It's been a debacle. You know, and like I said, not only that, like all of the other Metro games have been voted down on Steam, on the platform and have been horrible reviews and things like that. So yeah,
you just gotta make it available everywhere. That's what it comes down to. I think.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah. That's my opinion on it. But again, there's a thing called money and I assume some type of deal was made with Epic where it gave them something in return. Talking about a game store, Razer last April, almost a year ago, they announced their game store, the Razer game store, which you think from Razer would like, you know, Razer is a big company. They have a big following. They could do stuff with their hardware that coincided with game discounts, which they did. Like if you bought certain things, you got like vouchers and for their games, like, you know, for the games that are available in the store. But it seems like it hasn't worked out and they're going to be killing the Razer game store. So this was their, you know, this was a digital storefront for games. And it didn't even last an entire year. So obviously their model didn't work for whatever reason. Which makes you wonder, like, how solid is this model from Epic Games? We know Epic Games has a ton of money from Fortnite. Like, they have a lot of money right now. But how right solid now. Is that business? Yeah, how solid is that business plan going forward if, like, a company as big as Razer couldn't do this the way they wanted to?
A company as big as, not only as big as Razer, but, like, the name of Razer, too. Like, that's pretty near and dear to a lot of gamers, as many haters as there are. It's, like, people love Razer in all genres of all types of gaming, too.
Yeah, so for those who might have bought a game or maybe got a free game, they'll still work on the platform. Like, it's not like you're losing your games or anything like that. And the store's officially closing February 28th, so almost a week from now. So, yeah, that's kind of crazy. That was kind of took me by surprise when I read the story.
Definitely. Not that I can really say. I'm disappointed I never once used it or even looked at it to use it. So
we talked about it when it initially launched. Yeah. You know, I like I said, I think they were offering discounts on games if you bought like a piece of Razer hardware, which made sense. And it gave an incentive to buy Razer hardware because you're getting a discount on the game. But yeah, I guess it's just not working out, and they're not. It's probably wasting more money than it's making.
Yeah, I mean, maintaining the servers for this is probably fairly expensive.
Yeah. Well, so one new digital storefront is bite the dust. We'll see how long these other ones last.
Yeah. As much as like I love Steam, love using Steam. Okay, competition isn't bad either, though, right?
I agree. I'm not against the Epic Game Store by any means. I think one, their margins are great for developers. I don't think it's like, as you said, it feels like a beta product because it doesn't have all the functionality that Steam has.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like that we have choice, and I like that it does that. And yeah. Again, we talk about Epic having a lot of money right now. This is like their time to do it if they were going to do it because they have the money. And you know, just like any business, like it takes a couple years for it to start making money, you know.
Yeah, so, they better just hope that it's not too many years, because I see that Fortnite money starting to run out soon.
Yeah, they got to come up with something new.
Yeah.
But yeah, our final news story is a little bit of drama that is, you know, we talk about drama
so
all week, but the drama going on in the community, and it's kind of over, like, by the time, you know, we recorded, this has kind of all been done, but we want to talk about it because it is very important. You know, Think Computers and us, we're small, we're not a big company, and this kind of brings it home to us if something like this were to happen to us. So I'm sure all of you guys remember the Verge How to Build a PC video. Basically, they made a video, which makes sense. Like, they're one of the bigger presences on YouTube and the internet, one of the biggest websites on the internet, made in a tech focus, obviously. You know, how to build a computer. I think that's a great thing to do. I think it's awesome that any company would make how to build a PC, because PC gaming is getting just bigger and bigger, and having a guide to build your own PC is great, especially a video one. But after the video launched, there was so much backlash in the community because half of the things that were done in the video were wrong. Very, very wrong. And a lot of people, first, there was like all these comments on the video about everything that went wrong. They disabled the comments. Then a lot of very popular tech YouTubers made like reaction videos. And I even thought about doing one because there was just so much wrong in this video. It wasn't like one thing. There was just so much wrong in the video.
It was absolutely incorrect, almost the entire thing.
Yeah, we're not going to go over all that because that's not obviously what this news story is about. This happened way back in September, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. And it was hilarious.
And, you know, after all the reaction videos and everything, it kind of went away. I mean, I wasn't really thinking about it. You know, people kind of made fun of The Verge for a while, but it went away. They eventually took the video offline. They left the article on their website, which is a little weird, but they took the video offline. You know, and then come to last week, one of the most popular videos was from Bitwit. He kind of did his like Chinese guy impersonation, which is like his alter ego Lyle, making fun of the video. It's hilarious. If you haven't seen that, it's one of the funnier reaction videos to the Verge build video. It's funny.
It's the best way to watch the Verge build video.
Yeah. So he got hit with a copyright strike from Vox Media, which is the parent company of Verge, saying that they own the work and all this stuff. And if you're familiar, you know, you're a YouTuber, copyright infractions happen all the time. Like if you use a song that's copyrighted in your video, the algorithm picks it up and they will, you know, say, hey, we have to either mute the song in your video, or if you're like a monetized channel, the money that you're making from the video goes to the copyright owner, which makes sense.
To a certain
and that's
degree.
That's all auto. Like it's all part of the algorithm.
Yeah, and there's no way to talk to YouTube about it either.
Yeah, so with this was not that. This was Vox saying, this video, we own the content in that video. There was a deliberate strike. And the thing about strikes on YouTube, it's not a copyright, you're using somebody else's thing, which is not a strike on your YouTube account. A strike means like you've done something that's bad, and if you get three strikes, you're off the platform. And for somebody like Bitwit, who makes a living off YouTube,
yeah,
having a strike against your channel is very bad, because if you get more, like I said, you get two more, you're done. And there goes your livelihood, which is a big deal. And the thing is that his video is parody, which is allowed under fair use. There was another video as well that got striked from another channel. And it's being used as fair use. So it should be allowed. And he put this out on Twitter, and all these people came to his aid. And he contacted YouTube, and YouTube said, yeah, this is not a right. This is not a what Vox Media is doing is not right. So they removed the strike from his from the video, and the video is now back online. And I urge everybody to go watch it, because yeah, it's hilarious.
Drive the views up.
But the big thing is that they deliberately went after him, knowing that it wasn't a valid copyright claim. It wasn't. I mean, anybody who knows anything about copyright claims, or it's just like in general, you can parody something and it's your work, because you've transformed what they did and made it your own, which he did. And we don't need to go into all of that. But the big thing is that, you know, everybody forgot about this months ago, and then this happened. And this just shows that, one, you're so petty that you want this thing off the internet. You haven't removed the article from your website, which makes no sense. Then you're going after YouTubers who, luckily, Kyle has such a big following, and he got a lot of people behind him on this. But, you know, somebody smaller like... Somebody smaller like us, or any other, you know, smaller tech YouTuber would be like, holy, like, crap. Like, there goes this video that really helped my channel. I have to take it down. Now I have a strike against me. You know, all of this stuff. And then the CEO of The Verge puts a post out on their forums, which nobody has been on in years, like, to hide it on their website, saying that that The Verge is the victim of this. And that blah, blah, blah. And like, The Verge was the one who took the strikes down when Kyle showed emails showing that YouTube was the one who took the strikes off the video. And it's so bad. And the backlash for The Verge is like, I went on, you can see how many subscribers they've lost in the past week. And it's like 1,000 a day, which is pretty bad.
Yeah.
For The Verge. I mean, and it just shows... you know, the comments on all this stuff, and their videos, all their videos are getting voted down. And it's just like, why couldn't you guys do something about this? Like, be active part of the community and be like, okay, we messed this video up. Why don't we do a video with Kyle? Why don't we do a video with any other YouTuber? Or why don't we make a video saying, hey, we messed up. This is what you should be doing. Yeah. Like, this is actually how you do it. Instead of playing the victim, because they're playing like, you know, like, they didn't know that this was happening. Like, obviously, you know that, you know, you pointed out that you knew the strikes were happening. It's just, it pissed me off so much, because, like, again, we're a small website, we're content creators, and being attacked by a larger company, like, you know, do you think that we have money for, like, legal representation like Vox Media does?
Right,
you know
what I mean? They're leveraging their size and their power against what they felt was vulnerable targets, when they should have just left well enough alone, taken their beating, probably fired the dude, or at least
that guy still works for them.
Stumped him down.
Blows my mind.
He's done. I guess I read somewhere that he did another review of something or another how to, and it was wrong again. Like, all wrong again. Like,
and I mean, nothing against him.
I mean, kind of.
You know,
dude didn't do any research.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's blindly, like, he's 22. Misled people. Like, that's 22, terrible.
Which I believe he's 22. But again, somebody in that room who works at The Verge, which is one of the biggest tech websites on the internet, shouldn't have known what's going on. And again, we don't need to go into, like, why the video is wrong, but we do need to talk about why this is bad, and it pisses me off so much that, like, this was gone. We all forgot about it.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny for a couple weeks.
Like, they felt like they needed revenge. But, like, these people, even like, Kyle's video is not, like, an attack. It's, you've done something dumb. You made the news with this dumb thing. And, like, so now you get to have a parody made of you. It's not, like, you're mortal enemies from this all of a sudden.
Yeah, like, and then, Gamers Nexus made a video, a reaction video to what The Verge did, and they even invited The Verge to come, and they'll pay for the CEO of The Verge to come and talk about it, and he declined.
Yeah, they got issues over there, man.
Yeah, it's just, The Verge is, it's like bad culture, it seems like, and it's just like, if we made a bad video, and I've made mistakes in videos, I've made mistakes in articles, we've made mistakes on the site, right?
Everybody makes mistakes.
If we've made a mistake, we say, thanks for pointing that out. We'll update our results, or thanks for pointing that out, whatever. It's just like, they don't want to take the blame for any of it, whether it's the bad video, whether it's going after, YouTubers for the video, whether it's, all this backlash that they're getting now, like, they just don't want to take the blame for it. And that's such a bad culture within a company. I don't know. But it definitely, like I said, we don't want to keep on going on about this. But it's definitely something that's very important, because, again, we make money off YouTube. And if somebody, because we made fun of them or we made a reaction video to something that they did wrong, was going to try to take the livelihood away from somebody in our community, and our, because we are a pretty small community of tech people,
definitely.
That's important to us. Kyle posted that everything is back to normal now and all of that, so that's awesome for him, and we really hope this doesn't happen again with any other big companies that go after smaller tech YouTubers or tech websites or anything like that.
It's almost a speech issue. Where it's not, they're not the government, right? But it's almost a free speech thing, where they're like saying, you can't freely criticize us because we will litigate against you.
Yeah, and that's a scary thing, because they, again, we talked about it when the video first came out. It's great that you have such a big reach, and you're such a big website that you want to do a how to build a gaming PC video. That's awesome, but you did it wrong.
Yeah,
and
own it.
Own it. And your article's still on your website, which the article's wrong.
They haven't even corrected it?
No.
This is terrible. Who is this guy? This kid must be connected or something, honestly. Like, I don't know. Way the reaction from this is, like, it says to me that, like, he knows somebody and, like, he's not getting, I don't know, like, they're protecting him from this for some reason.
Yeah, it's just bad. So in any case, hats off to Kyle for getting everything, rectified. And again, if anybody has an issue like this, definitely put it out there. We're all in the same community, and we definitely would help you out, whether it's us, trying to get information about the issue, or, just doing like we did and posting articles about it to get the word out there to everybody else. Let's talk about what we have coming up next week. Cause we do have some cool stuff.
Cool.
I'll be taking a look at an ultra-wide monitor from Viotech. I've actually been a pretty big fan of Viotech monitors because they use Samsung glass. I mean, it's a nice monitor without all the extras that you're going to get from another higher-end brand, say, like Samsung or something like that. So I'll be taking a look at their GN34C. This is a 34-inch ultra-wide QHD curved monitor. It's a 100 hertz, which is typically, like, what you're going to see from an ultra-wide anyways, unless it's, like, a gaming-grade ultra-wide. 100 hertz is really good because it gives you the ability to game but not pay the super high price of, like, 144 hertz. 21:9 aspect ratio, which is awesome especially for productivity. So I'll be telling you guys all about that. And then I have a gaming headset, which is from Razer. This is their Kraken Tournament Edition. And this thing is it's one of the first Razer products I reviewed in a very long time. I reviewed the original Kraken. So this is their Tournament Edition. $100 gaming headset from Razer. So it's be interesting to see, like, I haven't used a Razer product at any length for years. So to go and see, like, how it maybe has progressed over those years would be kind of cool. So I'll have that for you. And then we have the Cooler Master MK730. So this is their 10 keyless mechanical gaming keyboard. Cherry switches in this one. And the wrist rest can be moved, which is good.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so this can be moved. Full RGB backlighting and all of that removable. Because it's 10, like, I love 10 keyless keyboards because they all come, at least most of them, come with a removable USB cable. And it's Type-C, so it's super easy to plug in. You don't have to worry about bending the thing up or anything like that.
Yeah, these seem like pretty nice decks when we saw them.
Yeah, they look nice. Yeah. I haven't tested it. I'll be doing all my testing this week. Probably playing some Apex Legends, which I'm pretty excited about.
What switches did you get on that?
They sent me all reds, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I do. But I was using that other one that had the Drevo keyboard, and like playing games with that is very like. So I like blue because I like the clicks and I like the feel, but like actually for like hardcore gaming, like we've been playing a lot of Apex Legends, like the reds do feel really good for gaming. I have to say.
I disagree, but that's okay.
Yeah. So talking about, it is the end of the podcast. We talk about if we did anything cool. I'll go first because we were just talking about Apex Legends. Derek and I have both been playing a lot of Apex Legends.
That's right.
And if you are new to the game, one, find out what character you like. And then this guy called the Gaming Merchant, which we'll have a link in the show notes to his YouTube page. He has guides on each one of the legends. And like after watching one and like for my the character that I like to play, I've got much better at the game.
Yeah.
And it shows you how to use their passive abilities and their specials correctly and things like that. Definitely good if you want to at least get a little bit better at the game.
Yeah, I did that actually. Well, I had played a couple matches when it first came out, and then I didn't play for a while. But I watched a little bit before I played with you guys because I'm not good at games, so I didn't want to be. I wanted to be less than terrible. It didn't go well, but which we actually live streamed that. I don't know if anybody caught that. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, we did.
Bob Ryan and I all played for like 5 hours. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I played for 5 hours last Friday night.
Yeah,
so
it's a good time. But since then, I actually, without playing with those guys, I've gotten a win. So it was zero wins on Friday, and I got a win, and no wins for Bob.
I still haven't got a win yet. I've gotten so close. Like, you know, it's one of those games where, like, you can play, like, you know, matches, if you're getting to the end, can be, you know, half an hour, you know, something like that. And you get so mad when you get to the end, and then your whole team wipes. But it is a lot of fun. It is a free game, so I would suggest you guys at least give it a try. It is fun.
It's
just one of those games you can definitely jump in and play a few rounds and just have a good time. I think definitely a lot more fun to play with your friends, but it's just a fun game. So
I think if you are playing Fortnite, you'll find that it's a better version of Fortnite minus the building. I guess if you really like the building,
I do, yeah. So that's one of the reasons that, like, I really liked Fortnite was the building, because it's a whole different element to the game, which I like. But yeah, that's all I've been playing lately. So,
gotcha.
So, yeah, did you do besides playing Apex with us? Did you do anything cool this past week?
I watched a bunch of stuff. You see that Netflix series, The Umbrella Academy?
I have not. It's like tell us all about it.
Superhero-ish thing, mystery, end of apocalyptic thing. I'm like six episodes in, and I still am like, what is going on?
So give us
the
premise of the show.
Well, they're like born. It's just really weird. It's these kids, and they're like born mysteriously. They were like the mother becomes pregnant and has the kid all within 24 hours.
That's weird.
Yeah, but that's not even like part of the movie. It just like continues to be like more and more stuff happening after that. It's just really weird, but it's also like they've got superpowers, and I don't know, I can't stop watching it, but also I'm like, I want to stop watching this at the same time. It's just one of those weird things. So I mean, maybe check that out if you're like searching for that new series to watch or whatnot. I watched a couple.
We'll have it in the show notes, and we'll, you know, I might check it out. I've been looking for a new show on Netflix, so.
There you go. I watched Bohemian Rhapsody, too, because it's on video now.
Oh, so good.
So good.
Yeah, such a good. So good. Have you ever watched one of those side-by-side videos on YouTube?
No.
So, like, the Live Aid performance.
Okay.
You can watch it side-by-side with the actual performance and then the one from the movie. It's identical. It is so crazy how true to life that is of that performance. And it has to be like, for people who saw that on TV or were there,
yeah,
rewatching the movie has to be amazing, because it's like the same thing. And these videos that people have made have like the live concert, like the one from 80 or whenever that was, in like the left ear, and in the right ear is the movie. It is you have, like, it's amazing. You have to do it.
Nice.
So we'll end things here, guys. Hopefully next week is not as much drama and more hardware stuff. But yeah, we'll catch you guys all next week. As I always say, full show notes page with everything that we talked about. And again, on everything, it's just Think Computers, all one word, if you want to find us. So till next week, catch you guys later.